Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner, or go to podcastone.com/mysurvey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/mysurvey, or click on the survey banner on podcastone.com.
Racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanshore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, man, you hear the laughing in the background. You know that it is, of course, another edition of the Shift and Steer podcast. I'm Brad Fanshawe, and I'm sitting here in the studio with Matt the Motorator DeAndrea. How's it going, Matt?
It's nice. I'm good.
What'd you drive here today?
Oh, I got a new Camaro ZL1, which is cool because a couple weeks ago...
No, it's not. They didn't send it over for me to drive, so what's cool about
it? Did you ask?
No, I didn't. That's good. Good point.
Hey, Brad, you're too tall for the car.
Well, I don't know about that. But hey, you heard his laugh when we opened up. That's Aaron Hagar, and he's up on the mountain. And so anyway, Matt, yeah, you were telling us about the ZL1.
You know, a few weeks ago, we had the Borla Leatherster Camaro with the 6-speed, and it had a Vortex supercharger on it. And, you know, we drove it around. We liked that car, right? And
yeah, also we went for a ride in it. It was just quick.
Crazy. Yep. I think we have a video somewhere. Did we post a video?
I haven't posted it yet. I haven't had time to edit it, but we will.
So we shot some video. You'll see it. So this ZL1 is, of course, Chevrolet's factory supercharged version, but it uses the twin screw supercharger instead of the Vortec type supercharger, the centrifugal.
More of a roots type.
Yes. And it's the LT4 engine, which is in the Z06.
Right.
Basically. And this one has the 10-speed automatic transmission. This is the 10-speed that GM,
you always wanted when you were a kid?
It is. It's the one I always wanted. They co-developed this with Ford, so it's the same 10-speed that's in the Raptor, and it's the 10-speed that will be available in the new Mustang as well.
Okay.
And, you know, I...
Wait a minute. So a Chevy transmission's going in a Ford, or is a Ford transmission in that Chevy?
No, I think they both got together and wrote a check to an independent transmission manufacturer and said, you stamp Ford on the ones you ship to me and stamp GM.
So there's a high-performance 10-speed in both of those cars.
Yes.
Or all three of those vehicles.
They share the development cost.
Yes.
And somebody, I don't know who, develops it for them.
It's
and,
a whole new you know, world.
And... You know, it's you could paddle shift. You know, it's got all the things we want in the modern day transmission, and there's different, you know, all sorts of different settings, and it's got the high performance version. And obviously, between these cars and the Mustangs and the Raptor, it's high horsepower, high torque capacity.
Right.
Right. So they've invested a lot into the 10-speed transmission. You can sit there and paddle that goddamn thing all day long. I mean, 10-speed sitting in traffic, by the way, you could just sit there and just go up and down and up and down, up and down. I'll tell you, like, I'm still kind of on the fence with the Camaro. It's because for me, you know, I always feel like I'm sitting way down in a hole.
Mustang guy.
Yeah, but it's got the high belt line on it, and I kind of in kind of a short window, and I feel like I'm kind of deep in the car. But that being said,
before you say that though, I know what you mean because we're so used to muscle cars and the early Mustangs, like your Fox Body stuff, where the belt line's low. You hang your arm out the window, and now you feel like, you know, you're looking out the window and your nose is at the belt line.
Oh, that's it. Like, I try to put my elbow on the window, and it was up by my ear,
like this,
and I was hurting my shoulder.
Yeah.
No, it's really true. It's like the midline of the car is up to your shoulder. now. It's at the top of your shoulder almost. You know?
Yeah.
Plus, everybody likes to lean their damn seats back.
I mean, shit, it's like being in a rat rod with metal seats in it. You know, you're way down on the floor.
Yeah, this is the other thing I can't figure out is the seat doesn't lean back.
It doesn't?
So not just the driver's seat. But the passenger seat, like, it goes back a little. But
are they carbon fiber or
something? No, and it just doesn't, I don't know, something about the electric adjustment, something, it doesn't really lean back. And even in the passenger seat, like, if you wanted to lean that all the way back and just, like, take a nap while somebody's going on a road trip, it doesn't go back. It doesn't go back very far at all.
I can probably explain that.
Okay.
Well, they're not made to sleep in.
Well, no. What it was Howie in accounting at GM. He came in during the meeting, and he said, hey, you guys, I looked over the numbers, and we can save like 10 cents a seat if we don't let them retract more than an inch.
It seems weird. I got to think it's like, I don't know, some kind of thing where, like, if it leans back too far, then the airbags wouldn't be effective. You know, it's some kind of weird safety thing to be like, oh, it's got side airbags.
But every other car with airbags,
because nobody,
you know?
I don't know what it is. It's weird.
Don't you want to be kind of far away from the airbags? I mean, little bombs under the dash, right?
I don't know why they don't lean back. I'm sure somebody knows, and it's probably like a very fine reason.
Hey, if somebody knows, you know, if you're like an engineer at GM or something, you're like, you know, hit us up and let us know why those seats don't go back any farther. Because Matt,
I like to get my lean on.
You know, he likes, you know, like he wants that look where he's like way back. You can't even see anybody's driving the car, right?
That's right. Already with that high belt line, you can barely see my head. If I could lean back another inch, you wouldn't see anything unless I wore a hat. Like a top hat, though.
Well, Matt just likes to lift the seat up so he looks taller in the car. Yeah.
You know, maybe what you need is one of those, like, two-inch spiked Mohawks, dude. Yeah, then you'd just be like,
there you go.
All we'd see is like this Mohawk cruising down the road.
This kid that used to work for me back in the internet days, he had like 8-inch spiked Mohawk.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do you get it to do
that? Use like a jar of stuff every day.
He said Elmer's glue.
Elmer's glue.
Yeah. And he said when he would drive, he'd have to completely tilt his head sideways to drive to get into work. He said it was really kind of sucked.
Yeah,
but he wouldn't do the
all for fashion, man.
But he wouldn't do the spikes all the time.
Yeah, but he couldn't get them like shorter so that he could like fit places.
Well, I mean, he could, but
did he start it when he was a kid because he wanted to go on rides? And it was like, you know, if you're
tall
this
enough?
Tall, no. I was like, yeah, see, dude, I'm this tall.
That would be funny if that's why. So he had like a Mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mohawk was long. He would just wear it, like, in a ponytail or something. And then when he wanted to, he could make giant, like, 8-inch spikes out of the thing or 10-inch spikes.
Have you ever seen the photos of me with a Mohawk?
No.
Yeah, I had a Mohawk for a while, but
did you really?
I just combed it all down flat.
I've seen you with your mullet and your short
shorts. I had a mullet, man.
And your short shorts and your mustache.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of short shorts, Magnum P.I.,
yes.
He wore those same short shorts.
Oh, yeah, he did.
And
yeah, but for him, they were regular shorts because he's like 6'9".
Well, yeah, but they were even shorter.
You went to Baby Gap.
I used to be able to buy in the kids' department. No, we talked a couple shows ago about the Munsters reboot. Then we talked about Starsky and Hutch on the last episode.
Yeah.
And since then, I conversed with James Gunn and on Twitter, and it's not a reboot. It's a continuation, and it sounds like it's going to be really cool. That's what I was wondering, right? Are they like just older or new guys in the seat? But anyways, and the producer is the guy who did all of the Fast and Furious franchise movies. So it's a pretty good gang of guys getting together.
So I know the guy.
So,
and I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything. I'm pretty sure I'm not supposed to say anything.
Go ahead and say it then.
But. But they're bringing back a TV show, Miami Vice.
Oh, no, I already know that. Vin Diesel. We talked
again?
About that on Man Seeks Adventure.
Yeah.
Because I reached out to Vin Diesel and I said, you're going to need, that car was all about the iconic car. And he got back to me. I mean, social media is such a wonderful thing. But the newest one, you talk about shorts, they're bringing back Magnum P.I. now.
Really?
Yes, and I don't know anything about it other than that the storyline is that it's Magnum's daughter lives on the island now, and she's the one living there.
P.I. girl.
P.I. girl.
I bet you she's a millennial.
I bet she is, too.
Is she going to drive a Ferrari California?
Oh,
you know
boy.
What? That's what I wondered. I hope they don't give her. I mean, it'd be the equivalent of a 308, I guess, you know?
Yeah, but is it... This sounds bad, but the Ferrari California is kind of the chick Ferrari. So if you have the chick Magnum PI, is that too much?
What they should do is have her go into Higgins' garage in the back, like Robin had this garage, and just, you know, what's in there? And open it up, take a canvas off, and there's like a vintage Ferrari.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And have her go, that thing's shit. Put and the cover
goes,
back down.
And she goes, oh, my God, look at this. This is awesome. But it's old. So, yeah, let's go. Trade it in at the she goes. Storyline is she takes it down to the
she and takes goes, it to the auction.
It's an old one. No, she takes it to the dealership and goes, this is old. And they go, tell you what, we'll trade you straight across for this used California. She's like, so you're going to take this old 65 California that doesn't even run and trade me straight across? Yeah, well, no problem.
Deal.
And then the investigation
says,
of the show is this dealer that rips people off. That could be. See, we're helping him write the storyline already.
So the Magnum PI daughter.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was ever married. So did he just bang some chick up on the side that he met over at Rick's place?
Of course.
You know it.
Yeah. Or is it somebody that he met? You know, he took him out on the helicopter ride with, what was that dude's name?
I forget.
Wait, is his daughter going to be Michelle Rodriguez?
I don't know. You know, it's a quandary.
Oh, she's with Dodd.
Are we
going to
do a Riptide? Dodd, do we need a Riptide remake? Didn't they have the...
What was Riptide?
Wasn't Riptide those two investigator cop guys? And they also had a... One had a boat. One had a helicopter.
And there were so many shows. And remember, they all had cool cars. Like, who was the judge who was the investigator? And he had that...
I think the guys from Riptide had a Corvette.
Well, one of these guys had a McLaren.
And
and it was like some judge who was retired, and he drove around the McLaren.
And
I mean, everybody had these bitchin' cars, you know? It's like, even like the Fall Guy had that raised-up truck
that
he jumped.
They're going to do a Fall Guy movie or something.
I mean...
No. I'm sorry, not Fall Guy.
What about Thunderbirds Are Go?
Hey, oh, I heard they're doing a remake.
$6 million man, but he's like the $4 billion man.
The $4 billion
man. No, seriously, there's a remake. I think it's. I don't know if it's a TV show or movie, but like the $6 million man is like that's nothing, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we just spent that on a car, in Monterey. So now he's like the $40 billion man or the $4 billion man. Like it's something ridiculous.
It's all done through like black budgets and the CIA.
It's funny because when they're like, we're bringing back the $6 million man, but the title was something really big, and I just keep thinking Austin Powers. Where like holds the world hostage for $1 million, and they're like $1 million.
Exactly. I mean, why don't they do the Fall Guy and say, and it will be starring Lee Majors. It's not a remake, and they're like literal. You know, it's like, you know, he comes out and he's like, you know, I'd do that stunt, but I'd fall. I'm the Fall Guy.
By the way, Lee Majors can be the $40 billion guy or whatever because he was all mechanical anyway.
Exactly. Don't they just like, you know, we're sending you in for a, let's set his head over here and get everything else straightened out and then he's back.
He would just have like a really old head.
Well, why don't they just have like the young head, do it all with Chiron and just use his old head and everything, you know? And then you could have, you know, the Jamie Summers do the same thing, you know? Hey, we should be making Hollywood TV shows, you guys. I mean, we're coming up with all the good ideas.
We should not be.
Just put Lee Major's head on Silver Surfer's body. There you go, the $4 billion man.
Wait a minute. Why don't we just put his head as like a hood ornament on some high-performance Hellcat or something, and he goes around like, Kit! We put his head on Kit, and he drives around like that. See? Man.
Hey,
that's why they don't trust us with the budgets.
Pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
So, hey, what I do want to talk about, something serious to talk about, though, is, man, all these floods in Houston, this hurricane and the floods and all the disaster down there. I mean, you know, we just, you know, Shift and Steer and all of us want to let everybody know that we are thinking about you guys and hope everything. I mean, I couldn't imagine going through that, man. I mean, that's like.
Oh, no.
I mean, you know, because it's almost like. You know, a huge, huge part of the city. I mean, we have a lot of customers down there from Bond Speed Wheels. And I've been talking to my customers because we've got wheels stacking up that we can't ship because UPS isn't taking shipments, of course. And these guys are like, hey, I'm okay, but, you know, everybody I know. And what you don't think about is the fact that, like, this one guy goes, yeah, I haven't been to work in a week, and my boss doesn't know when we're going to open back up because business is in a flood zone. And so these guys can't go back to work. So they're not making any money, and, you know, they've got friends and relatives and all of that. And one of the things, Rick, here in the studio that we were talking about this morning was that we didn't realize Houston was the fourth largest city in America. Did you guys know that?
No.
I thought it was like, I thought it was like Atlanta or Dallas or something like that, but it's the fourth largest.
Wow.
And they said that the water mass right now is the size of Lake Michigan. I mean, that's like crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I remember seeing the news when it first started that they were showing these graphs where they were saying, okay, you had the dollar that is being lost with Katrina, and this graph went way up. And then it said the one in New Jersey, and then it had the Houston one, and it was way, way down on the graph. Well, now this morning they were saying on the news that yeah, it's going to be a lot worse than we suspected.
Yeah.
Combine New Jersey and Katrina, and this one's going to exceed it because it's like 100,000 houses, and these aren't like track homes and stuff. There's some really nice houses.
I was in Florida for Hurricane Andrew, and that was pretty big and pretty much wiped out like so much of South Florida.
Yeah, but isn't that like once a year it happens down there?
Yeah, this one was kind of big though. But, you know, and as far as like the car world, obviously people lost homes, they lost their properties, and the Air Force base down there basically washed away. And there were entire like car dealers were gone, like all the cars, the buildings, like just everything's just gone, you know, everything's just gone and toppled over and flooded. And I know that's a big thing. It's weird because in the automotive industry, I get some industry news and I'm like, yeah, we're going to start bringing in cars into the area. And, you know, I'm like, okay, but who are you going to sell them to? Like, what's I don't
everybody
really
who lost their car?
I didn't really understand the point, but yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, let me say, you know,
still
hey, we're
flooded, so
we're thinking about the people. And but being car guys, this car show, we wanted to talk a little bit about the car side. And you had said Andrew, and I remember in Andrew, one of the big stories I remembered there was that there was some metal building on somebody's property, and Auto Week showed a picture that they had captured from like a news copter going over, and the one wall was down, the roof was totally gone, and the building was stuffed with vintage Ferraris. And they were all waterlogged kind of on their sides and stuff. And I mean, these were like GTB4s and I mean, nice stuff. And then when you think of, what was the name of the New Jersey one that just, the big hurricane that flooded everything? I can't remember, but that one, the big car related thing there was that's pretty much what toppled Fisker cars, because they had been making those cars overseas, bringing them in, and they had like, I don't remember the exact number, 200-400 cars that were offloaded off of a ship, waiting in a holding yard to go on a train, and they all got flooded. The problem was that their insurance policy covered them when they were on the ship, covered them when they were on the train, but some little clause in there that when they're in the holding lot, they weren't covered.
They're not covered.
So they lost like all those cars.
Insurance company stuff too, you know. Reason not.
But it's one of those things where somebody, you know,
they don't cover cars that are in New Jersey.
Yeah, in New Jersey, in a flood.
Yeah,
we don't cover cars in a flood. But when you look at Houston and you think of just all the daily passenger cars, every time you turn on the news, it's car, it's truck, it's, you know, tractor, whatever, they're all flooded and under the water. Well, those are toast. But then you start thinking Houston is a huge car community. Exotic cars, sports cars, race cars, and muscle cars, hot rods, all that. And you wonder just how many of those are underwater and destroyed too. Because
I'm looking at some statistics and it's saying of insured cars, between 7,000 and 10,000 vehicles have been either claimed or towed. 2,500 cars have been towed already. But I mean, imagine all the dealership cars that are just sitting
there. Oh, that's got to be small numbers.
Huge number. because they're immobile, you know.
But, I mean, when you think they're about, just, like, if some guy had a vintage Ferrari and it was one of 25, now all the other guys around the country are going, yes, now it's one of 24.
Right? Well, I mean, anything that's worth that kind of money, you can fix.
Yeah, well, yeah, anything that's worth a certain amount, it's going to get fixed.
Yeah, it's going to get fixed. And you'd like to think that some of those cars were moved out of the way.
Yeah, but like when you look at some of the nicest neighborhoods that got flooded, it happened in the dark of night because they made that decision that they had to empty the spillways and the levees so that the dams wouldn't break. And so like people in these, I mean, these were gated like mansions. And they said, we went to bed last night, everything was all right. And overnight they opened up these spillways. And they said, well, it was either flood all these with a controlled flood, but they didn't tell anybody. They didn't say, like, hey, by the way, we're going to be flooded. And they, like, went downstairs, and they were up to their chest. And so if you had your cars out in the shop, you're thinking, oh, we're good, we're dry, and then I'll, boom, you know?
It's pretty amazing, and I know there's a lot going on out there. Obviously, there is, and there's lots of ways to help and to donate, and Red Cross and different volunteers, and by the way, let's, you know, like, not everybody has money available to give, you know.
Are you talking about us again?
Specifically you, Brad.
Of course. That's true.
But there are other things you can do, right? So I donated some money to some of the stuff, and then I donated all of my my miles.
Oh, your frequent flyer miles.
I donated my miles, and different airlines are doing.
Does 5,000 even buy a seat on anything?
I don't know, but it'd be nice if I had 5,000. No, I did. I donated. Yeah. Southwest has a program where you can pick.
Oh, cool. I didn't even know that.
You can pick the charity, and there's one that you know, it's just all volunteers that are going out there and doing a thing, and they need to get there. They need to get home eventually and stuff. So that's another thing you can do. If you're sitting on some Southwest miles or something, and you know, you don't have a lot of cash right now, you can donate.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Miles. Yeah.
So that way, if people need to get home, if they get stranded somewhere, or if they need to get to a relative's that's somewhere out of town, I'm sure that helps them. So that's cool.
And I'm not sure specifically, but I think Southwest was also like matching some miles or donating miles or something like that as well. So there's lots of ways to try to help if you'd like to. And, you know, just look around.
Well, you know what? It's really sad, but those things do happen. I mean, you know, we've had earthquakes out here. There's tornadoes. There's floods. It's just it's part. So it's great that people help out, and it's great that those happen. But I'm sure as the months go on, we will see and hear from car people about some of the losses they suffered. And you know what? To some guys, man, their car, their muscle car that they saved and worked their butts off to get, that's their prized possession, and if they lost it, that really blows. And I was talking to a guy, and he brought up a really good point. He said he had a couple buddies that their cars got flooded. They had them in their garages, you know, like building them, and he goes, and they're not insured because they didn't drive them. They were building them.
Oh, that's
I never even thought of that. You know, some guy who's
got a
car. Yeah, and so that really sucks. So, anyways, but hey, we're thinking of Houston. Houston Strong from Shift and Steer. And, you know, let's move on to other stuff. And, hey, did anybody watch Richard Rawlings' new show the other night?
I did not.
Nope.
But
it's called Bar Rescue. Oh, excuse me. Garage Rehab. Garage Rehab.
So it's Bar Rescue for garages?
They come in, they put a bar in a shop, and they rescue like the guys like that. They're done. Walk out. That'd be awesome. We should do...
Garage bars?
Garage bars, yeah. You know? We should just start doing, like, spoof videos of everybody's show.
Did you watch it?
I watched part of it.
Is any good?
Couldn't get through a whole episode. Part of it's because of Richard.
Yeah.
Part of it's it was just, I mean, here's how I kind of brought it, was like, here's this little shop that, you know, they're kind of struggling, they're doing stuff, and it's, you know, they come in, hey, we're going to make things, everything great, and, you know, we're going to start by doing this, start by doing that. And one of the things was, these guys are saving a bunch of time, wasting a bunch of time by going down the street and getting their wheels and tires mounted up. So we brought them in a something-something, you know, tire-changing machine. And I'm like going, That's like a $6,000 or $9,000 machine. These guys aren't even really doing that kind of work. And do you know how long it would take them to recoup? It's like a real shop if they didn't get it donated to do that. It just didn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, true story, over in Corolla's garage, we have mounting and balancing machines.
And they're not easy to use because I've used them.
And you're right. And the guy around the corner who's really good at this, that's his whole job, does them for us for like $20 a week.
Yeah.
So
it's you take them somewhere, especially when you start getting into high-performance rims and high-performance tires, because you cannot imagine. Just on the set of Car Warriors, when I did Car Warriors, I would say that four sets of wheels and at least 10 tires. And these were all guys that knew what the hell they were doing, including myself. I ruined two tires because you start getting and you're trying to do it fast, and all of a sudden you split a sidewall or you bend a hoop. And
and all the wheels we're working on in the shop are like really expensive three-piece BBS wheels that we had to order and
made. That are super fragile
because
those racing BBS use the thinnest hoops for lightweight, and so they're easy to bend.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, well, one of the guys brings like his old, you know, older like Infiniti G35 in the shop, and he's going to put some new, you know, order some tires and tire rack. Yeah, we'll use the machine for that.
Sure, it's easy.
Yeah, and then, you know, you scuff the rim, you bust out the airbrush or a little bit of silver, and you can just touch it up or something, or the rattle can, it's fine. But for the most part, most of those wheels and stuff that we have over there, it's just much easier to go to the local guy.
I mean, you know, I know they're looking for new concepts, trying to come up with something for Richard to do now that Gas Monkey. Now, Gas Monkey, is that show gone?
I don't know. So, wait, Gas Monkey's
the
good option.
We're supposed to know. I know. I'm talking about the show. What's the show?
The show's Fast and Loud.
Fast and Loud.
Yeah.
Is that show off the air now? We're supposed to know. We're supposed to be telling our listeners, guys. They're not supposed to be. You know.
I'm sorry. I don't know.
Casey left. Aaron left, as far as I know. So it would be just Richard. So I didn't know
you were on the show.
Vamping it.
Aaron left? Are you talking in third person or first person now?
My bearded brother. My longer bearded brother.
You know, look, they did a good job. They made an entertaining show, and Richard Rawlings wanted to be on TV. He made a nice career out of it.
And guys made a ton of bread.
Made a ton of money and opened bars and restaurants and things like that. So, you know, that's what he set out to do, and it's good.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of respect for that side of it. Now,
absolutely.
You know,
we'll
some
see
of
what
the things that he builds, you know, don't really fit my style.
No, but it got great ratings, so it means that the people are there. Now, this new show, we'll see. I haven't looked at any of the things. And like I said, I just saw part of a show, wanted to check it out. But like you said, it's bar rescue just with cars. But I don't know if it translates as easy.
It's fantasy television. That's what I call reality TV. I call it fantasy television. It shouldn't have the name reality in it. You know, I don't know where that came from.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, because it's all authentic and real.
Come on, it's really simple. It's fantasy television. I've been doing some press on some other stuff, and I started calling it fantasy television. It's like, it's not reality TV. It's fantasy television. Let's just recategorize the whole thing right now.
Fantasy Island?
It's like that's okay. If you retitle what they do, it's okay. It makes it okay. You call it fantasy television, everything's okay. They can do anything they want, and you go, yeah, right on. That's a great fantasy, man.
They should do.
Right?
They should be able to do anything they want except put airbags on a Ford GT.
Why can't they do that?
Because you ruined the Ford GT. I'm picking on the Gas Monkey guys. Did that Ford GT, and they made it black and like satin black and put airbags.
How about that F40 that they did?
Oh yeah,
the F40.
All his
now, Brad, Matt, come on. Was that a continuation F40? Was that one of the ones that they didn't get back? Was that a continuation?
That was like a theft repair or a wrecked one that they took.
It was like a title salvage or something.
A salvage title. Yeah, that's what
it was.
It was
something weird with it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's still an F40.
It's still an F40.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hot rod F40.
Right.
Hey, you know what? Right. We can laugh, but it got great money at Barrett-Jackson. It's sold twice now, and it's got good money both times.
But it's not getting F40 money. Yeah. It's getting good money.
It's not getting F40 money, but they didn't have F40 money into it either.
Does it have an LS swap?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
But, well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's Richard Rawlings starring in Garage Rehab, a new TV show that is on it's on Discovery. And
it's on the Big Boy Channel.
That's right. And
if anybody's watching the show, I haven't seen
it. Yeah, let us know what you think.
Let us know what you think. Yeah, I'm curious to know.
And did they call you about that show when they were casting for it? They did, didn't they?
I said, I don't want to go to Texas.
No, I'm serious. Didn't they call you?
No.
Oh, they didn't? I honestly thought they did. Because I know the casting people called me, and I think I was too serious for the show. So, and I didn't have tattoos or anything, so.
You know what? Now that I think about it, maybe you're right. Maybe
I think
they did
you told me they did. Yeah, I think you told me they did.
I think maybe they did.
So, but did they call you when they were casting for that, Aaron?
I have no comment about that whole situation. Yeah,
I didn't ask if you had a comment. I said, did they call you for casting? So, hey, you know what we totally missed? And you guys might have talked about it on CarCast, but back this spring, did you guys talk about the fact that the Porsche 911, the millionth car ever built, came off the assembly line?
We did not.
Oh, really?
We just did an episode this week. Our episode is all about Porsches.
Wow. Okay.
With Spike Ferriston.
Yes.
We didn't talk about that. The episode we did talk about was the GT2 RS, which launched in L.A., not at an auto event. It launched at E3 with the Forza Motorsport.
Right.
And this is the first time, like, a car had a major launch at a video game press event, and it's the cover of the game. And anyway, so Spike Ferriston ordered one. He's got a friend that he, like, buys cars with, you know, so if they want a $300,000 Porsche, they go for half each, right? So we talked about that, but the millionth 911, correct me if I'm wrong, was it green?
It was ugly green.
It's
I don't know where. I guess the first one was green, so they made the millionth one green. Is that what it was?
I don't know. Do you know the story, Aaron?
It's pine tree green.
Yeah,
pine tree green.
And
it's
does it say
a 911?
What you're looking at, does it say why? Does it say why it's green?
Irish green, yeah. No, they're calling it Irish green.
Which is weird for the millionth German car.
It's a tribute to the original 63.
Yeah, see, the first one was green.
Yes.
But the first one had a lot of bright chrome on it, which kind of toned down the green. That one's just like a big green car.
Interesting.
But you know what? Someday
it's a little different.
It's a millionth car, but I mean a million. I guess I never really thought about it when I saw the news thing that I ran across. I kind of went, "Wow, I never really thought about that." They've built a million of those 911s, and then I thought, "Does that seem like a lot, or does it seem like, gosh,
when
that would have happened a long time
64,
ago?"
64,
yeah, 64 or five. Wouldn't you think that a million of them would have got built by now? You see them everywhere.
Yeah. It said the original 1963 model. It's actually pretty cool. It's got kind of that black and white plaid interior and seat insert. It's got a nice little millionth Porsche plaque on it. It doesn't look too bad. It's got some nice details.
I'm the only
one in front of a computer, huh?
Yeah.
Well, and speaking
of, I can look at this stuff.
No kidding. You can be the research man. And speaking of Porsches. The editor of Auto Week, who I've known for a long time, and you know him too, he put up recently some spy photo. Not spy. They let him in. Mm-hmm. Could not say of an excess warehouse that Porsche has. It's stuff that's not in the Porsche Museum. And Mark Vaughn was invited to go look at it. Oh my God! Did you see any of those photos on Facebook that he put up?
Maybe I saw.
He was over in Germany, and it was like, you know, in the foreground is the Golf, you know, 917. And then it's just every rare racing Porsche that you could ever imagine. And then in another room, one of every color, every car. And you're just going like, Oh, my God. This is an undisclosed area that I'm not allowed to even say what city it's in.
Did they always have them, or did they decide to start acquiring cars for their collection museum at
That's
some
a
point?
Good question.
You know?
Because
like when did Porsche start to say, we need to own these cars?
Do we
right?
need to own one of every color here and just have them over to the side? Or did they say, oh, we need to start a museum? You know? I mean, it's
because,
like,
by the way, nobody's ever knocked on Adam's door or sent me an email and said, hey, you know, we want one of your cars for the museum, or we want one of your spare engines, one of three V8 engines made for the race cars. Like, nobody ever says that. And we ask all the time, and they're like, how come nobody?
Well, what was interesting was it had the Paul Newman 935 in their museum, and it says it's not the tribute car like is out in the public.
Oh, like ours?
Yeah. Wouldn't that suck? Wouldn't that suck? Like, they go, oh, we have the real one over here.
Real one. They have the O30 or the O33. One of them is the O30, and one of them is the O33, and one of them was smashed, crashed badly. The one that Adam has was not the crashed one.
That's
we know
a good
that.
Thing.
We know that for sure, yeah. But, you know.
What were you going to say, Aaron?
I'm looking at the Porsche magazine article on that warehouse you're talking about, Brad. And boy, there is some eye candy on this. Oh my gosh,
dude! I mean, it's got everything.
There's some amazing cars in there.
Go to Mark Vaughn.
Glass. There's containers like wooden containers stacked on each other. You know, 2, 3, 4 high, with glass fronts. With old race cars in them.
I mean, it's like, so cool.
It's cool, so cool. Man.
It looks like Matt's personal garage.
Yeah.
But hey, if you want to check this out, amazing. You can go on Facebook, go to Mark Vaughn, who's the West Coast editor for Auto Week, and he's a good guy to follow anyway, because he's a really good car guy. I've known him forever, and Matt's known him, and he posts some pretty cool stuff once in a while, and that was one of the cooler things lately, so... Wow. Check that out.
I made a post on
There's
social
a Porsche
media
motorcycle
recently.
On.
There is.
I see a Porsche motorcycle. It looks like a flat 4-cylinder in there with it's pretty cool. Yeah, there's some neat stuff. Yeah, go check that out, folks, because if you're into this stuff, which you probably are, there's some neat stuff in that warehouse. Wow.
I'm
still drooling. Sorry.
Really like them, and I'm really crushing on 911s right now. And I made a social media post, and I just said, I really, really want a Porsche, but I'm not sure I'm ready to be
a Porsche
guy. If you're a Porsche
guy, yeah.
And there was a little controversy on that.
Get a little blowback on that there, Matt?
No, look, everybody that follows me is, you know, there's not a ton of people, but everybody's super sweet, and I appreciate it, and we have great conversations, and I try to respond to everybody. But yeah, like, there's... Like, I'd like to drive the Porsche around, but I'm not ready to commit to, like, getting up at 5 a.m. every Saturday or whatever Sunday and meeting all the Porsche guys and getting coffee and doing the, like...
No, that's called being a Porsche club guy.
You know, like, I'm just not so
There's
committed that then all my cars got to be Porsches and then, like, all I got to start wearing Porsche stuff. You know, like
no, you don't.
I just want to own the car, man. I just want to.
Dude, Matt, you just need a keyring. Just throw it down on the bar.
I've owned a few of them, and the one thing that I got sick of more than anything was, you know, everybody's thinking you got lots of money because some of these Porsches are real affordable, and they don't realize that you can get a twin turbo Cayenne for $10,000, you know, 500 horsepower. But the thing I got sick of was, what's the difference between a Porsche and a porcupine? The pricks on the inside.
Well, I don't think that's
I got
fair.
Real sick
I'm
of that
just,
one.
I'm just
I
saying.
Got, I got real sick of that one. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Also, you got to consider like the town you live in. Out here, everybody's got a Porsche, so it's not
right.
You know, it's not that
right.
big of a deal.
Exactly.
It's a great car. Like I and you know.
Matt's going to get one.
It really is.
Then on Saturday
it
mornings,
really
he's going to be driving down to Malibu with his Starbucks and getting out, and he'll have his polo shirt that says Porsche, and he'll have his, like,
All right, so one of two things can happen. I can buy the Porsche and just wear a Mustang T-shirt all the time, or I could drive the Mustang around with a Porsche hat on all the time.
Okay.
There you go. Well, I
you could buy a GT3 RS and live in it.
Yeah.
There you go. My buddy has one, and we took that out on the track. I think we talked about that last episode. couple weeks ago, and that was hella fun. What an amazing car. I would love to own one of those. But I had a 993 C4S because, you know, we live in Tahoe, and it's all-wheel drive, and I'm going to get snow tires. And it was a sleeper. It had about 400-plus horsepower. It was really nicely done. And I got in so much trouble in that car. You know, my ex dragged me back into court. She thought I, you know, made $1 million all of a sudden. I was driving a $150,000 car. I mean, it was such a heartache for me. And I only spent $25,000 on that car. I got that car for $25,000. It was the first, like, nice car I had up here that I financed. And it just was, like, a horrible experience. And I'd love to have another one. You know, I'd buy the wife a Panamera if I could, because, you know, those are coming down. I've seen those in the high 20s and 30,000. And it's like the build quality of those cars is stellar. That 2000 Porsche Cayenne, that thing doesn't even squeak. I mean, the everything is covered in leather. Even the backside of the door pulls, you know, on the doors is leather. I mean,
but yours had fake carbon fiber dash.
It's leather. Yeah, you know, I mean, they're
like
really
puffy.
Nice.
I remember in the 80s, I wanted so bad a friend of mine, actually Bob Harrow, who, if you're into BMX or freestyle, you know who Bob Harrow is. He was a bicycle guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a black factory steel slant nose wide body twin turbo cabriolet. And that was like, oh, my God, man, I got to have one of those. And I wanted one in such a bad way, and I never, ever got to own one.
You bought the Ferrari instead?
Yes, I did. And then they, like, you know, went way down because nobody wanted them because they were old cars, old Porsches. And I was looking the other day. Those cars now are, like, up over $100,000 again, you know?
I remember when I was in fourth grade. Yeah. Fourth, fifth grade, we lived in a cul-de-sac, and the guy at the end of the cul-de-sac had a 930, had a Porsche
930. Oh, really? Yeah.
And I was like, that car, and, you know, even being a kid, I was like, that car is badass. I don't know what the guy ever did with it. He probably sold it, probably got divorced, lost it.
Wrecked it, you know.
Let me shift gears for a little minute, see what I did there.
I wish you would, because, yeah, you know, you were hitting the rev limiter.
Okay, good. Aaron, tell me about the $81,000 Ducati I saw in the dealer the other day.
Yeah,
that thing was crazy,
yes,
right?
I had a little comment about that.
When did motorcycles become
$81,000? I went in there and the guy's like, it's carbon fiber everything. Carbon wheels, carbon frame, carbon everything.
Yeah, I know. Those things are absolutely gorgeous. And Ducati really does make some very, very, very cool limited motorcycles. One of my favorite being the Mike Hailwood 900 is just an amazing looking machine, and they were a fortune, and they're still like in the mid high 20,000s. But I think it all started what was that one called when they first came out with the 10 series?
What was the bike that I posted. It was,
what were you doing in the Ducati dealership?
I was dropping off a friend. He was dropping off his bike for service. So this was what? It's a Ducati 1299 Super Leggera.
Super Leggera? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
and it was, by the way, red and white. Red and white and satin looked fantastic on this bike. It was numbered. This was number 313 of 500 made.
Yep.
There's an engine plate with a dude, Luigi. Literally, the guy's name was Luigi.
That's the guy who put it together, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Luigi's a good man.
And the bike is $80,000. They charge you $895 for the destination charge. And the dealer charged $895 for prep. So it was $81,790.
What a steal.
Yeah.
He said it was 368 pounds. I think they make 215 horse. And he said this one had an exhaust on it, so it was like 220 or 230 or something like that.
I mean, here's the bottom line about those bikes is that they are collector's bikes. They truly are just works of art that you put in your man cave, or I've known guys that have literally put them in their living room on the wall in glass cases.
Expensive piece of art.
Not a great experience. Even on the track, they are purebred race bikes. I mean, they're so lightened, and those carbon fiber wheels or those magnesium wheels, you hit a pothole in those things and they go out of round.
These are carbon.
They're super high maintenance.
They spring back to shape.
Yeah, super high maintenance. And my little comment, my little kind of, I have a Panigale at the shop, and I actually ride the RSV4 Aprilia because it's a lot more user friendly, and I've got 208 horsepower on that bike, and it weighs 8 pounds more than the Superleggera. So it's and I got that thing for I think $7,000 or something. So but yeah, these bikes, starting with the old back in the 916 days, they're just beautiful, amazing machinery. But yeah, they're super, super expensive, and most dealerships, I don't even know if they can even work on them because everything, titanium, magnesium, and they need special tools. But boy, are they gorgeous!
So
they
you're saying it's
gorgeous.
The equivalent of like my Baldwin Motion Vega, where it looks really cool sitting in the garage. People come over and they go, "Oh my God, that's so bitchin'. This, how often do you drive it?"
Yeah.
Never, because it's fragile.
Yeah.
It's a race car, and if I drove it, it would be worth less money. So basically, they're the same type of animal.
That's a tough one, though.
And I'm just like a Ferrari. It's like, well, you drive your Ferraris, It's like when you're in that price category, you drive those things. And in all honesty, these guys probably ride these things, But a friend of mine who used to prep all the big bikes coming in to California, he told me, he goes, "Dude, don't do it." And it started with the Desmos Adige, which was just, an amazing motorcycle. But he said, "Don't." He goes, just buy an R. He goes, "You have all the performance, you have all the rideability, you have all the wow. But if you're going to get, Desmos Adige, or you're going to get a Superleggera, just enjoy it for its beauty and don't ride it."
Dude, the way they prepare Desmos Sedici at the Italian restaurant I go to, I love it. The noodles are always perfect, and the sauce, it's just incredible.
I got my Ducati al dente.
Yes, exactly.
I love it.
Hey, speaking of...
I was going to say, even the Paul Smart and even the Mike Hailwood bikes, they're notoriously uncomfortable. They're notoriously, high maintenance. I do have a buddy who raced the Mike Hailwood version, and his was all carbon fiber, Olin suspension. And he set it up properly, and he said, "I can ride this thing." He goes, "I can actually ride it and race it, and it's a true rider." He goes, "But if you buy them stock," he goes, just put them in the corner, leave them in the crate, put a piece of glass over the crate, and know you've got a very limited edition, low mile motorcycle.
I mean, any of those Ducatis are so fast. I mean, Ducati gave Barry Weiss and I for a weekend. I think I talked about it long ago on a show. The bikes to ride, and they were scary fast, and they were just incredible.
Yeah.
But speaking of scary fast, factory prepped. Have you guys heard about that 2018 Challenger SRT Hellcat widebody? you got to hold your breath.
There's a picture online. It's like a gray silver one or something with that orange lip in the front. That thing is gorgeous.
Well, I mean, it looks like the Demon. And I guess where the flares came from was that when they did the Demon race car, they had to have those flares to fit those slicks under it and everything. So the engineers were all standing around, and I guess they said, "Hey, we got these flares. We've already developed it. Let's do something else with it."
Yep.
And they created this one.
Like a month or so ago, when I went to Detroit with Adam Carolla, we screened the 24 War at the Henry Ford Museum, and then we went on this sort of this tour with the Peterson Checker Flag 200 Club. We made a couple stops at different car collections. And up there, they have this, they're building, this private track.
Okay.
Kind of like thermal out in Palm Springs.
Right. Only can't use it year-round up there.
You can't use it year-round. And it seems small. At first, I thought it was, a go-kart track. And anyway, when we got there, there were some things on display for us. There's a guy had a Ford GT. And Ralph Gilles from Fiat Chrysler was there. He's the famous designer for that, head of design or something. He was there. He had a Demon, and he had this wide-body Hellcat. And he's like, this is going to be the new Hellcat. It's like, we're doing this in the wide-body. And it's like, why? He's like, because we already made a wide-body, and we like it.
We need to use it.
And we need to make the Hellcat a little different
now. We need
now.
To amortize and, those yeah. Tooling costs.
And it's funny because maybe 4 or 5 months ago, our buddy Goldberg, he bought a Hellcat. He has a Challenger Hellcat and a Charger Hellcat.
Now he needs a wide-body Hellcat.
And he's ordered a Demon. Right? And then I talked to him on the phone when I got back from Detroit. I was like, I just saw the Hellcat with a wide body. He's like, I know. I'm going to sell mine and get that one. I was like, you've had yours for like 4 months. You just had it wrapped and wheels on. He's like, yeah, I'm going to sell and get that other one. I'm going to get the wide body. I was like, did you order a Demon too? He's like, yeah, I'm going to have them both.
God, if he was a baller, he'd have the whole thing and they'd all be matching.
Right?
And yeah, I mean, come on.
He loves driving it.
I mean, the only difference they say is the hood scoop. It doesn't have the Demon hood scoop. It's got the standard.
Also,
hood.
It doesn't have 840 horsepower.
No,
or something. It's a Hellcat. It's not a Demon.
Standard Hellcat. It's the 707 horsepower supercharged Hemi. So you're going to have to live with 707 horsepower.
Yeah.
But it's got the same flares as the Demon. It's got a splitter air dam up front. And one of the big things, other than the wheels and the flares, is this one has electronic steering box. And what that gives you is, because it's more of a track car, is you can switch it on the fly from a street mode to a sport mode to a track mode. And that gives it more handling. And they've stuffed 20x11s under this with 305 3520s. So it's a pretty beefy car. It looks really good.
Yeah. I thought I had a picture on my phone from Detroit.
I just sent you guys one.
But I don't.
I know. I just heard it on the air as it came through.
Yeah. This is.
But this is enticing cool. Radio when you're pulling up a photo on your cell phone. You know, this is the
By the way, Jeep Trackhawk.
Chicken Hawk?
The Jeep. Chicken Hawk.
Okay.
The Trackhawk is...
Is this an SRT?
It's the Jeep Grand Cherokee, the SRT
yes.
8 that
right.
we've all loved with the 470 horsepower, but with the Hellcat engine. And now that this
And they're calling
out,
it the Trackhawk?
Trackhawk.
Okay.
I
Not
think.
The Chicken Hawk.
No, it's Trackhawk.
I say, boy, they're calling it the it's, Chicken
it's,
Hawk?
It's like 85 grand because the Grand Cherokee... always had like the nicer leather interior and things like that. Like, so it's starting to get, you know, it's not inexpensive. Like, it's inexpensive.
Let's just say you don't see a whole lot of them around.
Right. So they're saying 0 to 60, 3.5 seconds.
Jeez.
It runs a quarter mile, like 1160s, and has a top speed of 180 miles an hour.
Nice.
Okay. Handles well. Giant Brembo brakes, okay? So consider an SUV of this size. 60 to 0, it's like 116 feet. It's sub 120 feet.
Yeah.
And sub 120 is like was supercar territory not that long ago. Yeah. So it handles. It's fast. It's supposed to be pretty crazy. And it tows 7,200 pounds.
Nice.
So you can tow a car in a trailer. You can tow your Demon
but
to
you know
the track.
What? You still have to stay in the right-hand lane and
no
keep
way.
It under 55.
Yeah.
Damn it.
I watched the whole video of, like, the auto show, like, press launch of the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it actually looks pretty badass. They did some extra, like, scoops.
Well, they've always styled them nice,
yeah. And it's got the aggressive hood and, you know, the big wheels and
so
it's got
it's
a
like
good exhaust.
It's like my Mini. It tows, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It was funny. The only thing they didn't mention in the press conference was the miles per gallon.
Oh, who cares?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I
already hit up the guys at FCN and was like, when is this thing available? We got to drive one of these goddamn things. Because we did drive, you and I both drove separately, the Range Rover Sport SVR.
Yes.
And that's a big SUV
that
does 0-60 in like 4 seconds, right?
Yep.
And all the fanciness
of a Range Rover.
Of a Range Rover. That one was cool because it has the exhaust note of like the F-Type R.
Yeah, it's nice.
And so
people look around when you pull up. They look around like, okay, where's the supercar? And you're like pulling up in that thing, you know?
And I heard one the other night. I I was out the other night in Hollywood, and then I heard something. I was like, I hear a Jag, and then I didn't see it. And all in black was a Range Rover. It's like, oh, that's an SVR. Yeah. I heard that
you
thing
do strange. Not see many SVR Range Rovers running no. around. I haven't seen one, actually, yet. I've seen Jaguars, but I haven't seen any in the wild down here. Now, I remember when they came out with the first SRT8 Grand Cherokee, and
Maybe 10 years ago?
Yeah, and I tried really hard to talk Chrysler into giving me one as a SEMA car.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had all these great drawings and everything. And I almost had them, and then they went, yeah, they won't let us do an SRT8. And
yeah.
I was like, God damn, you know. It was
so
like,
close.
So close.
So would you build an F-150?
Yeah, I built an F-150. I put, like, I think 100
grand. Does that have an IRS
100 grand
in the back and a manual?
What, you mean the one I built?
Yeah.
Oh, that one had the Roush 32-valve supercharged motor, and it was all independent. We did everything.
Yeah, it had an independent rear.
Yep.
Did you put a manual in it?
Yep, 6-speed manual. So we had to hang a clutch.
Where's that
truck? We had to do everything. I sold it to a guy who has a big trucking company in Canada. He's actually bought 3 of my cars, and he has a place out in Palm Springs, and he keeps it out there.
I always liked that thing.
It was a nice truck.
I want to say it was like a bronze and brown and gold or something
well,
like that.
Well, I did. The paint was a special mix eggplant with a gold underlie, and then we did all the accents. I worked with a company, and we actually created a powder coat. And what I did is I took them a brand new copper penny, and I said, this is the color I want. And so we made copper penny, and then the interior was all buckskin leather.
Yeah. I remember seeing that thing, and that thing was pretty badass. And I was like, what? Is that a manual? Who did that?
I know. Because at the time, they weren't doing a Lightning at all. They weren't doing any high performance. And so it was like we built what they couldn't do at the time. It was cool. It was neat.
Yeah. What year do you think that was?
I did that in 2004 because it was the first year of the new body style. So
that's right. And they had a Lightning.
They had a Lightning concept truck at the time. It was silver, and that's all it was.
Right. But the Lightning was like 99 to 03 or 04.
It ended like 2 years before we did that one because they ended it because they were coming out with the new body style.
Right. It was still the old body style, but it might have been like a model year 3 or 4.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, it was like a carryover.
But I remember the year that we did that, you could not buy a Lightning.
And I do remember their silver Lightning concept, right?
Which they let me crawl under that. I was back in Detroit doing some meetings with Ford, and that thing, I'd seen it everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at it, and it's got, you know, it had the 32-valve motor in it and everything.
Oh, I didn't even know if it had all that. I thought it was just a body kit.
Well, no. And then I said, so can I crawl under? Because, you know, I got to, you know. And they're like, well, yeah, but there's not much under there. There wasn't a drive shaft. Wasn't a transmission. And when I crawled up under the bed, there wasn't even a bed in it because it had like a topper on it.
Oh yeah, like
there was no bed,
like a hard cover.
There was like 2 batteries that were like with tie down straps to the frame rails, and it had a dead axle in the back. It was just like a tube with axles in it, and all it was a pusher, you know. And it was like, you know, show cars, you know, that's what show cars
are. Yeah.
Look, by the way, save some money. Don't build a whole truck if you're just doing a concept, right?
Yeah, like, if you're Ford, you know, because everybody got excited about it.
Yeah.
You know, but nobody you know, looked underneath it. So it was crazy. Yeah. That thing was neat. But yeah, so you know, I mean, all the car companies are doing so much, and it's just really coming on, and it's just car after car. I wonder how long it'll last, because at some point, I mean, we're already hearing about, you know, no fuel vehicles, and you know, at some point it's just going to end.
Yeah. So, I know we're running out of time, but we brought this up a couple weeks ago. Volvo is going to hybrid
everything
or electric.
Yep.
They're not going to do just combustion engine. It's going to be hybrid or electric. I think Rolls Royce is doing that, and now Aston Martin has just committed to it.
Yeah, because Britain has said that no combustion engines. After, I forget what year, we brought it up on a previous show. So they got to, you know, I mean.
Now, Aston Martin is still very much a, you know, super GT car.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll probably still do something like their twin turbo V12, but with electric motors, like in the front, or electric motor off the transmission, like, you know, Ferrari, McLaren, and stuff like that. So they'll do a supercar of some sort. But I don't know. I don't know how long they're going to get by with that kind of thing, you know. And I forgot what their commitment was going to be. I don't think it's 2020. It's probably like 2025. They're just not a big enough company. They're all hand-built that they can't. It's tough for them to make a commitment and go, hey, in 3 years, we're going to be all electric. Like, that would require billions of investment.
I heard that the government's going to seize their plant and burn it to the ground.
Burn it down.
But then they had to change their plans because that would put too much combustion in the air.
That's right. They're just going to sink it now.
So they're going to smash it with electric motors. So, hey, I think we should wrap this one up on a happy note. On a happy note, that Matt's going to go out and burn rubber in that ZL1 Camaro this afternoon.
I absolutely will.
And as hot as it is here in LA today, you could burn rubber without even spinning a tire.
That is a very well-sorted chassis. Like I was saying in the beginning, there were some uncomfortable ergonomic things, but very well-sorted chassis. And I hit that thing, and I was like, man, this thing's locking up, and it's going. And then I didn't even realize, and I looked at my rearview mirror, and there's two big rubber stripes. And I'm like, I guess it was really going. It's a pretty well-sorted.
Does it have the black patch option where it's just two little spray bars that when you jump on it, it sprays them on the street?
But you know how, like, you know, Ford has their Shelby GT350, then they have their R model.
Yeah.
The ZL1 has a 1LE track package, which I don't have, and you can get it with a manual transmission in the track package. I tried getting that from Chevrolet.
And they said no?
No, this is odd. This is a weird press car thing. Like, everybody goes, hey, man, are you going to track the car? I'd be like, no, I'm not going to track it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
This is the opposite. They said if you want the manual, it's track only.
You can't even drive it on the street?
You can't even drive it on
the
street.
So they just deliver it to the track?
They just, I guess. And I, you know.
They said, what track did you rent, Matt?
Yeah,
oh,
right.
You mean I got to rent the track too?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to give me the track and the car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just me out there on my own.
Yeah, so that's why we're driving the 10-speed auto. But if it's nice to do back-to-back the Borla 6-speed Camaro with the factory 10-speed ZL1 Camaro.
So you really get a feeling for it. That's cool.
So at the end of the day, I decided the ZL1, even with the automatic, would be great, but with the Borla exhaust.
Yeah. But you know what I was thinking is that you'd have to have paddle shifters on that car, though, because they'd have to really widen that center console to have a 10-speed manual transmission.
10-speed channel.
With all these gates, you know?
And, well, you know, there's two sticks, 1 through 5 and,
there
and
you go.
6 through 10.
Like one of those old Hurst shifters, the dual gate shifter. So, hey, everybody, I think we're going to wrap it up. Matt, where can they find us online?
Yeah, check us out at all of our social medias at Shift Steer Media. And, of course, we love good reviews and
I think
ratings.
We winded Matt or Aaron.
Aaron.
I mean, Aaron, you there?
What?
All of a sudden, we're getting this heavy breathing. Hey. We thought we excited you or something.
Sorry, it's the altitude.
He's winded from laughing.
We're gasping for air every breath we take.
So little oxygen in his brain.
Okay. So yeah, where can they find us?
You know, look, we love doing the show. We love to grow the show. So if you get a chance, you know, share it on your social media and get some more people to listen to it. And
we really need more people to follow us, guys. I mean, we can't tell you enough. If you want to keep listening to Shift and Steer, tell your friends to go to, you know, subscribe, listen. We need all of that. We need you to subscribe on iTunes, but we need you to download the show every week and listen to it because that helps us with our numbers, and we need that so bad.
Yeah, we're going to get some advertisers.
So bad. So bad. So, anyways.
You know what, though, guys? I just had a moment when you said I was breathing into the mic. Pete used to always do that, if you remember. Pete, we would always tell Pete, bring the mic close to your mouth, and then we tell him, don't be breathing into the mic.
Yeah, but Pete gets a free pass.
He was always huffing and puffing.
Pete gets a pass. Come on, man. He was in his 70s, you know? You're only in your 50s.
No, I'm not. I'm in my 40s.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So, hey, everybody. This has been another Shift and Steer. Hope you enjoyed it. And the way you can show your appreciation is by following us on all our social media and all those places Matt told you about and subscribing on iTunes. For another week, I'm Brad Fanshaw.
I'm Matt DeAndrea.
And the heavy breather is
Aaron Hagar.
There you go. Thanks, everybody.
Aaron Hagar.
If he calls you on the phone, you'll know who he is. So, all right, thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.